Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:04 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is March 6th, and I thought that today we would look at Wall Street. You've got the S&P 500 in front of us. There are definitely some important machinations happening in Europe, so that's certainly bringing Europe back onto the radar. Then China continues to rebound, and that's obviously following the announcement of a very significant fiscal stimulus that's going to persist for the next few years in China. So that's clearly a very supportive signal for asset prices there. Then, of course, there are continued machinations about the outlook for the UK and the pound. But what I think is interesting right now in terms of Wall Street, we've had 3 consecutive days on the downside. On Friday, it rebounded reasonably impressively off its lows, but now we're back testing that low. This pause, for the want of a better word, over the course of the last 2 weeks is roughly similar sized to the pause we had at the beginning of February and at the end of January. And even the small pause, it was just a one-day pullback we saw at the beginning of January. So this is the fourth minor consolidation within the context of this rebound that started on Boxing Day. It's going to have to pull back below 2750 in order to register a larger pullback. But I think what's also really worth considering, and it's one of the reasons why we almost always start out with the longer term chart, is to highlight that the index has got some room in which to consolidate. So it had rallied approximately 3.5% above the trend mean. That would be a somewhat larger pullback, but not something that's probably going to have a great deal of psychological impact on the vast majority of investors. But considering that the market had rallied for just about 9 consecutive weeks, it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some form of consolidation here, and there's no guarantee that the 2700 point level is going to hold. Well, there is obviously an area of resistance in the region of 2800 because that's where the market paused between October and December before the big decline. So this is obviously an area where people are starting to ask questions. And there is perhaps no bigger question than the outlook for the treasury markets. 10-year treasury yields were down again in here today. There is obviously a war going on between the two sides of the argument, whether the 2.5% level is going to hold or not, or whether we're going to see yields sustain a move back above the trend mean. Well, it's really a polarized view of the markets that's starting to evolve here. Either everything's going to be fine and the Federal Reserve is not going to raise interest rates, that inflationary pressures are going to remain contained and that the economic expansion is going to persist, or the economic expansion is going to be derailed, or that the slowdown in the first quarter is going to be larger than people anticipate, and that the Federal Reserve is not going to stop raising interest rates, or they're not going to pause or moderate the pace with which they're reducing the size of the balance sheet. So those are two very different alternatives. And the fact that we have such tight trading in terms of the yield, I think it does suggest that when we do get a breakout, it is going to be dynamic in nature. And we give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic. The most recent dynamic was, in fact, on the upside, despite the fact that we've had 3 days on the downside. As long as that 2.5% level is holding, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to, I think, investors remaining reasonably sanguine. But if yields start contracting below 2.5%, well, then that is going to be representative of people looking for a safe haven. And when we look at the shorter end of the curve, then we get perhaps more information about the outlook for interest rates. And the simple fact of the matter is that the yield is still below the trend mean, and it pulled back from the 2.5%, or well, the 2.55% level in just the last couple of days. It's just about at the 2.5% level now. If it can push back above 2.6%, well, then we'll be talking about it, the outlook for interest rates starting to improve again, that there's a likelihood that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates. There's no way they're going to do that if they don't have very clear, sound economic activity to base it on. So that could be viewed as a positive from the perspective of markets, provided it is considered to be not on autopilot, but rather that they are responding to conditions. There is obviously going to be some data coming out on Friday, and with relation to labor and unemployment, and obviously the market is looking at any of these data points as something on which to trade off, because we're in this very tight range. And I think, as I said, this is not going to persist indefinitely. Well, when we then think about what is doing well, Facebook has been breaking up and away from the region of the trend mean. There's certainly some interest coming back into the FANG sector. When we look at the performance of the NYSE FANG Plus index, then it has been also pausing in the region of its October through December lower highs in this case. Baidu, which had been one of the shares that had pulled back most aggressively in 2018, was among the better performers in here today. Tencent, which is not listed in the US, so not in that FANG index, was breaking up and away from the most recent little range yesterday, and was pretty much unchanged in here today. But this is a really impressive rebound that we've seen here for Tencent. And that, I think, really does help to demonstrate that some of the return to a bullish characteristic in the Chinese market is also having an effect on the US markets, because so many of those very large cap companies are listed there. But I'd like to, before we move to Asia, I thought that it would probably be more important to continue to look at some of these government bond yields, because there's an increasing likelihood that the ECB is going to re-embark on quantitative easing. If they come through on Thursday and reduce their growth forecasts and reduce their inflation expectations, then that's really a clear signal that the ECB is getting ready for an additional round of quantitative easing. That's incredibly important for asset prices. The big question, it was a question that I'd been voicing all the way through December and into the beginning of January, was where is the next round of quantitative easing or liquidity going to come from to propel asset prices higher? Well, the answer seems to be pretty clear. The regions that were underperforming most, those that had really suffered from the withdrawal of liquidity last year, were both China and the Eurozone. So it is from Europe and China that we can anticipate that we're going to get the largest provision of liquidity. Well, China announced yesterday that they're going to have a fiscal stimulus in the region of $300 billion over the next few years. There is also the potential that the ECB in the second quarter, potentially the third quarter, is going to re-embark upon quantitative easing. Now, the 10-year, or the Bund in Germany, is down to 12 basis points. It's been trending down for all of the last year, and there is a clear potential that it is going to go back into negative territory. Well, if the ECB does embark again on quantitative easing, then they have at least, the way that they've been doing it so far has been to buy bonds based on the relative size of the issuer's GDP. So that has been particularly beneficial to the German government because it's the largest economy. But what we've also started to see here is that Italian and Spanish yields have also been contracting. And what that is very clearly suggesting is that people are now thinking that perhaps a pickup in yield of 240 basis points is probably not a bad deal, particularly if the ECB starts buying those bonds again. And the Italian government bond yield is now squarely below the 200-day moving average, and there is the potential for further compression here if the ECB does in fact start to move towards additional liquidity provision. And I think that that is not just a potential, I think it's the most likely scenario, for the simple reason that there is no way that Europe is ready for higher interest rates. And the lip service that the Bundesbank pays to saying that they need to reduce the size of the balance sheet is simply to appease the domestic base. There is no way that the ECB is ready to do that. An increasingly large number of people are starting to talk about the Japanization of Europe, and I think that there is some weight to that argument, that Europe has got some very significant problems, and the simple fact of the matter is that there are still very substantial outstanding debts. The fiscal austerity has led to populism. I think if they can't politically do away with the fiscal austerity, then there has to be some form of some kind of support for the market, and that's likely to come from the central bank. And that is, I think, what we've seen already, and I think it's going to continue. Well, if the Federal Reserve is still reducing the size of its balance sheet and the ECB starts to embark on quantitative easing, then it is quite likely we are going to see the euro trade below 110. So it has been trending downwards now for over a year, and there is, in fact, if we simply look at the trend that we have on the euro and compare it to the Bund over the same period from the beginning of 2018, then we have really quite a clear correlation. So as long as German Bund yields are contracting, then that's unlikely to be a beneficial characteristic for the euro. Well, the euro was steady in here today. It has paused at 116, 115, and 114, and each time it has done that, it has moved to a new low. So I think before we see it back above 114, it's quite likely we're going to see it below one, below the low that we had in the middle of February. If they do start to buy bonds again, well, that should be beneficial for the banking sector, because it will increase the value of their very significant holdings of their respective government bonds. The one thing that the banking sector in Europe has been doing has been stocking up on sovereign debt. And part of the reason they've been doing that is regulatory, but they haven't been issuing a lot of additional loans. They're still sitting with a lot of bad debt, but because they've got so much of their capital invested in government bonds, if those government bonds rise in price, then that makes their balance sheets just look better by doing nothing at all. So when we look at those European banks, well, obviously there are some significant stories coming out about banking secrecy laws, about the willingness of private banks to engage in money laundering activities. This isn't exactly news. This has been going on in Europe for decades, if not centuries. And the appetite for reform and closing of loopholes, or even the sharing of information between so-called members of a common customs union, seems to, there doesn't seem to be any appetite for that at all. Well, we can look at the European banks sector and see that it is at the lower side of the range. It's coming back up towards the region of the trend mean. It has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. That's the most important thing that it's done in more than a year. Well, that suggests that there is the potential here for the banks to do better if the stars align. I think it is perhaps just a little early just yet to reach that conclusion. If it's trading back above the trend mean, we would have very clear confirmation that the trend is broken in terms of the selling pressure that's been evident over the course of the last year and counting. And then when we look at what's going on in China, well, the A-share index was in positive territory again in here today. This is a very substantial break of the downtrend. It has, in fact, recouped more than half of the decline last year over the first 2 months of this year. So this is a very impressive rebound, and the only thing that we can compare it to is the kind of rebound that we had at the end of 2014. Something that I've been saying for quite some time is that bull markets in China tend to be state-sponsored, and there are very large numbers of retail investors. They wait for cues from the communist administration to tell them when to buy stocks, and we've got that now, where the government is starting to talk about lending some support to the private sector, because they've definitely been weighing on the private sector. It's the private sector was most reliant on shadow banking, because they were cut off from accessing loans from the banks. It's also the private sector which has had much more oversight from the gatekeepers of the Communist Party. So that also added an additional layer of bureaucracy and potentially bribery to the private sector as well. So now the administration is starting to pull back from that. I know it sounds like a very simple thing, but one thing that Mrs. Tracy was telling me yesterday is that she's having no problem accessing YouTube at the moment in China. And that's a very big change, because that's not something at all that we couldn't access YouTube for the last 2 years, anytime we've been in China. And now she's been in both Guangzhou and in Shenzhen, and she's having no problem at all accessing YouTube. That's a very clear suggestion that the administration is loosening up, that they really want to try and stoke investor demand and consumer demand for the economy. So we are definitely in a point now, I think, where there is state sponsorship for the stock market advance, and this is still a very powerful uptrend. And when we look at what's going on in Australia, well, anything that's good for China is likely to be positive for Australia. And the fact that the industrial resources are doing better, the fact that China's market is back on the front foot, that really should be positive for the Australian market. There has been a lot of anxiety in Australia about the pullback we've seen in the property markets in both Sydney and in Melbourne, and that is non-trivial in nature, considering the size of those markets for the banking sector in particular, and also in terms of consumer demand. But one of the things that has rescued Australia from any kind of recessionary threats over the course of the last 20 to 30 years has been China's ability to rebound in the face of slowing global growth, and their willingness to stimulate their economy and create demand for Australia's exports. So if China is rebounding here, then that should be positive for the Australian economy. Now, when we look at the Australian dollar, it is still weak here. So there are two competing arguments. The resources sector should really start to perform once more in Australia, but whether that is going to happen soon enough to rescue the property market is another big question, and that is going to inhibit the RBA from raising interest rates. So that the Aussie dollar now is right back testing that 70 cent level, and it needs to bounce and bounce soon if it's not going to extend the decline in here. Well, of course, that is potentially a very significant factor for the gold price, because Australia is a major producer of gold, and the price of gold was at a new all-time high just towards the end of February. We've had a reasonable pullback in the gold price over the course of the last 2 weeks. I think when we think about every lesson that we've learned from trading gold over the course of the last 20 years, then the mantra "don't pay up for commodities" is as true today as it ever was before. The gold price is now back in the region of the trend mean. It was in very mildly negative territory in here today, so the pace of the decline is starting to moderate, but we need an upward dynamic to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The much broader pattern, though, is that gold prices have been ranging below $1,400 since 2013, and that really feels like a long time. And there are really significant, I think, challenges out there on the horizon in terms of the need for governments to issue a great deal more debt to fund the debt that's already maturing, but also to fund the deficits that they are planning on running. And the victim of that is going to be the purchasing power of their national currencies. That is the kind of condition that could be potentially very bullish for gold, but it's going to have to sustain a move above the $1,380 area to really confirm that we're back in a not just a short-term bullish environment, but a medium to even potentially longer-term bull market environment. I think it's rather interesting to think about that in terms of the Dow Gold ratio, because it has rallied very impressively since the low back in 2011, and we've had a meaningful pullback in 2018, and the ratio has rebounded with the outperformance of the stock market over the first 2 months of this year. But if we look at it historically over the course of the last century, there, even in the context of a secular bull market for equities, there have been meaningful rallies in gold that have lasted for a couple of years in duration during the context of anything up to a 20 to 30 year bull market in gold or in stocks. So that is potentially what we're seeing today, that there is certainly scope here that if we do get a country that is willing to experiment with modern monetary theory, and it could yet be the USA, then that is likely to be one of the most bullish characteristics for gold over the medium term. So I do think that it is going to be an interesting market to look at if we do get further weakness. Then the oil price has been ranging in a very tight manner for the last week, and it has steadied again from around the $65 area. This developing range is very similar to the one we saw in January and February, and it's right in the region of the trend mean. So this is an area where people will be asking questions about whether the market is going to be able to push up and out of this range. And I think in the absence of a clear downward dynamic, we could probably give the benefit of the doubt to some additional upside for the oil price. Then lumber today was limit up, and what's I think particularly interesting is that when you look at it on a daily basis, that a limit up move looks so very small. That is a true testament to just how volatile the price has been over the course of the last couple of years. But it is now demonstrating support in the region of the upper side of the underlying base, and it suggests that we've seen the extent of the selling pressure. As long as the low from today holds, then I think there is potential here for higher to lateral ranging. Well, that should be generally positive for the housing sector, because it is representative of additional demand. I think the other interesting market here is coffee. It hasn't been particularly often that you see Arabica coffee trading below a dollar, and it has started to bounce. When we look at the market, it has been up one day and down the next over the last four sessions. If it can push back above the dollar level on a sustained basis, well, then we can start to think about the potential for a rebound. If it can break the almost 2.5 year downtrend with a sustained move above the trend mean, then there's the potential for a more significant advance. But it's certainly getting more interesting at this rather psychological level for the market. So it's not as if the market has no risk. I certainly think that there is scope for some additional consolidation on Wall Street. But we are starting to get the answer to where is the liquidity going to come from to support this market. In fact, the weaker markets are, the greater the likelihood is that we're going to get additional stimulus. And obviously, eventually, we're going to run out of stimulus, and there is going to be a contraction economically. We certainly see from central banks, though, is that they are willing to act much sooner now than they were previously. And that is a testament to just how much of a shock they got from the credit crisis. The last thing they want is a replay of that. So that suggests that we are going to be in a liquidity-fueled environment for the foreseeable future. And eventually, we are going to start to get inflationary pressures rising, and not least because of the populist wave and wage demands, but it isn't readily apparent just yet. So I do think we are in for some consolidation, but I rather think that we're probably not going to get much more than consolidation. And there is, I think, the clearest evidence that we would have of a return to demand dominance beyond this 2 month rally is a significant higher reaction low. If we get that, then that would certainly help to bolster the view that this is a more than year-long consolidation rather than a top. But obviously, we need that evidence in order to truly draw that conclusion. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.